Listening Library presents Eldest, Inheritance, Book 2, by Christopher Paolini. Read for you by Gerard Doyle.
This is Christopher Paolini. As always, this book is for my family, and also to my incredible fans. You made this adventure possible. Sionar Sverdar Sitya Havas. May your swords stay sharp.
A twin disaster. The songs of the dead are the lamentations of the living. So thought Aragorn as he stepped over a twisted and hacked Urgal, listening to the keening of women who removed loved ones from the blood-muddied ground of Farthendur. Behind him, Saphira delicately skirted the corpse, her glittering blue scales the only colour in the gloom that filled the hollow mountain. It was 3 days since the Varden and dwarves had fought the Urgals for possession of Trondheim, the mile-high conical city nestled in the centre of Farthendur. But the battlefield was still strewn with carnage. The sheer number of bodies had stymied their attempts to bury the dead. In the distance, a mountainous fire glowed sullenly by Farthendur's wall, where the Urgals were being burned. No burial or honoured resting place for them. Since waking to find his wound healed by Angela, Aragorn had tried 3 times to assist in the recovery effort. On each occasion he had been racked by terrible pains that seemed to explode from his spine. The healers gave him various potions to drink. Arya and Angela said that he was perfectly sound. Nevertheless, he hurt. Nor could Saphira help, only share his pain as it rebounded across their mental link. Aragorn ran a hand over his face and looked up at the stars showing through Farthendur's distant top, which were smudged with sooty smoke from the pyre. 3 days. 3 days since he had killed Durza. 3 days since people began calling him Shadeslayer. 3 days since the remnants of the sorcerer's consciousness had ravaged his mind, and he had been saved by the mysterious Togira Ikonoka, the cripple who is whole. He had told no one about that vision but Saphira. Fighting Durza and the dark spirits that controlled him had transformed Aragorn, although for better or for worse, he was still unsure. He felt fragile, as if a sudden shock would shatter his reconstructed body and consciousness. And now he had come to the site of the combat, driven by a morbid desire to see its aftermath. Upon arriving, he found nothing but the uncomfortable presence of death and decay. Not the glory that heroic songs had led him to expect. Before his uncle Garrow was slain by the Razak months earlier, the brutality that Aragorn had witnessed between the humans, dwarves and Urgals would have destroyed him. Now it numbed him. He had realized, with Saphira's help, that the only way to stay rational amid such pain was to do things. Beyond that, he no longer believed that life possessed inherent meaning, not after seeing men torn apart by the Kull, a race of giant Urgals, and the ground a bed of thrashing limbs, and the dirt so wet with blood it soaked through the soles of his boots. If any honour existed in war, he concluded, it was in fighting to protect others from harm. He bent and plucked a tooth, a molar, from the dirt. Bouncing it on his palm, he and Saphira slowly made a circuit through the trampled plain. They stopped at its edge when they noticed Jormungandr, Ajihad's second-in-command in the Varden, hurrying toward them from Trondheim. When he came near, Jormungandr bowed, a gesture Aragorn knew he would never have made just days before. "I'm glad I found you in time, Aragorn." He clutched a parchment note in one hand. "Ajihad is returning, and he wants you to be there when he arrives. The others are already waiting for him by Trondheim's west gate. We'll have to hurry to get there in time." Aragorn nodded and headed toward the gate, keeping a hand on Saphira. Arjihad had been gone most of the 3 days, hunting down Urgals who had managed to escape into the dwarf tunnels that honeycombed the stone beneath the Beor Mountains. The one time Aragorn had seen him between expeditions, Arjihad was in a rage over discovering that his daughter Naswada had disobeyed his orders to leave with the other women and children before the battle. Instead, she had secretly fought among the Varden's archers. Murtagh and the twins had accompanied Arjihad. The twins because it was dangerous work and the Varden's leader needed the protection of their magical skills. And Murtagh because he was eager to continue proving that he bore the Varden no ill will. It surprised Aragorn how much people's attitudes toward Murtagh had changed, considering that Murtagh's father was the dragon rider Morzan, who had betrayed the riders to Galbatorix. Even though Murtagh despised his father and was loyal to Aragorn, the Varden had not trusted him. But now no one was willing to waste energy on a petty hate when so much work remained. Aragorn missed talking with Murtagh and looked forward to discussing all that had happened once he returned. As Aragorn and Saphira rounded Trondheim, a small group became visible in the pool of lantern light before the timber gate. Among them were Auric, the dwarf shifting impatiently on his stout legs, and Arya. The white bandage around her upper arm gleamed in the darkness, reflecting a faint highlight onto the bottom of her hair. Aragorn felt a strange thrill, as he always did when he saw the elf. She looked at him and Saphira, green eyes flashing, then continued watching for Arjihad. By breaking Isidar Mithrim, the great star sapphire that was 60 feet across and carved in the shape of a rose, Arya had allowed Aragorn to kill Durza and so win the battle. Still, the dwarves were furious with her for destroying their most prized treasure. They refused to move the sapphire's remains, leaving them in a massive circle inside Trondheim's central chamber. Aragorn had walked through the splintered wreckage and shared the dwarf's sorrow for all the lost beauty. He and Saphira stopped by Auric and looked out at the empty land that surrounded Trondheim, extending to Farthendur's base 5 miles away in each direction. "Where will Arjihad come from?" asked Aragorn. Auric pointed at a cluster of lanterns staked around a large tunnel opening a couple of miles away.
"He should be here soon."
Aragorn waited patiently with the others, answering comments directed at him, but preferring to speak with Saphira in the peace of his mind. The quiet that filled Farthendur suited him. Half an hour passed before motion flickered in the distant tunnel. A group of 10 men climbed out onto the ground, then turned and helped up as many dwarfs. One of the men, Aragorn assumed it was Arjihad, raised a hand, and the warriors assembled behind him in 2 straight lines. At a signal, the formation marched proudly toward Trondheim. Before they went more than 5 yards, the tunnel behind them swarmed with a flurry of activity as more figures jumped out. Aragorn squinted, unable to see clearly from so far away.
"Those are Urgals!"
exclaimed Saphira, her body tensing like a drawn bowstring. Aragorn did not question her.
"Urgals!"
he cried and leaped onto Saphira, berating himself for leaving his sword Zarok in his room. No one had expected an attack now that the Urgal army had been driven away. His wound twinged as Saphira lifted her azure wings, then drove them down and jumped forward, gaining speed and altitude each second. Below them, Arya ran toward the tunnel, nearly keeping a pace with Saphira. Auric trailed her with several men, while Jormungandr sprinted back toward the barracks. Aragorn was forced to watch helplessly as the Urgals fell on the rear of Arjihad's warriors. He could not work magic over such a distance. The monsters had the advantage of surprise and quickly cut down 4 men, forcing the rest of the warriors, men and dwarves alike, to cluster around Arjihad in an attempt to protect him. Swords and axes clashed as the groups pressed together. Light flashed from one of the twins, and an Urgal fell, clutching the stump of his severed arm. For a minute it seemed the defenders would be able to resist the Urgals, but then a swirl of motion disturbed the air, like a faint band of mist wrapping itself around the combatants. When it cleared, only 4 warriors were standing, Arjihad, the twins, and Murtagh. The Urgals converged on them, blocking Aragorn's view as he stared with rising horror and fear.
No, no, no!
Before Saphira could reach the fight, the knot of Urgals streamed back to the tunnel and scrambled underground, leaving only prone forms behind. The moment Saphira touched down, Aragorn vaulted off, then faltered, overcome by grief and anger.
I can't do this!
It reminded him too much of when he had returned to the farm to find his uncle Garrow dying. Fighting back his dread with every step, he began to search for survivors. The sight was eerily similar to the battlefield he had inspected earlier, except that here the blood was fresh. In the centre of the massacre lay Arjihad, his breastplate rent with numerous gashes, surrounded by 5 Urgals he had slain. His breath still came in ragged gasps. Aragorn knelt by him and lowered his face so his tears would not land on the leader's ruined chest. No one could heal such wounds. Running up to them, Arya paused and stopped, her face transformed with sorrow when she saw that Arjihad could not be saved.
Aragorn.
The name slipped from Arjihad's lips, no more than a whisper.
Yes, I am here. Listen to me, Aragorn. I have one last command for you.
Aragorn leaned closer to catch the dying man's words.
You must promise me something. Promise that you won't let the Varden fall into chaos. They are the only hope for resisting the Empire. They must be kept strong. You must promise me.
I promise.
Then peace be with you, Aragorn Shadeslayer.
With his last breath, Arjihad closed his eyes, setting his noble face in repose, and died. Aragorn bowed his head. He had trouble breathing past the lump in his throat, which was so hard it hurt. Arya blessed Arjihad in a ripple of the ancient language, then said in her musical voice,
Alas, his death will cause much strife. He is right. You must do all you can to avert a struggle for power. I will assist where possible.
Unwilling to speak, Aragorn gazed at the rest of the bodies. He would have given anything to be elsewhere. Saphira nosed one of the Urgals and said,
This should not have happened. It is an evil doing, and all the worse for coming when we should be safe and victorious.
She examined another body, then swung her head around.
Where are the twins and Murtagh? They're not among the dead.
Aragorn scanned the corpses.
You're right!
Elation surged within him as he hurried to the tunnel's mouth. There, pools of thickening blood filled the hollows in the worn marble steps like a series of black mirrors, glossy and oval, as if several torn bodies had been dragged down them.
The Urgals must have taken them, but why? They don't keep prisoners or hostages.
Despair instantly returned.
It doesn't matter. We can't pursue them without reinforcements. You wouldn't even fit through the opening. They may still be alive. Would you abandon them? What do you expect me to do? The dwarf tunnels are an endless maze. I would only get lost. And I couldn't catch Urgals on foot, though Arya might be able to. Then ask her to.
Arya. Aragorn hesitated, torn between his desire for action and his loathing to put her in danger. Still, if any one person in the Varden could handle the Urgals, it was she. With a groan, he explained what they had found. Arya's slanted eyebrows met in a frown.
It makes no sense.
Will you pursue them?
She stared at him for a heavy moment.
Will or no?
For you. Then she bounded forward, sword flashing in her hand as she dove into the earth's belly. Burning with frustration, Aragorn settled cross-legged by Arjihad, keeping watch over the body. He could barely assimilate the fact that Arjihad was dead and Murtagh missing.
Murtagh!
Son of one of the 4 sworn, the 13 riders who had helped Galbatorix destroy their order and anoint himself king of Alagazia, and Aragorn's friend.
At times Aragorn had wished Murtagh gone, but now that he had been forcibly removed, the loss left an unexpected void. He sat motionless as Oric approached with the men. When Oric saw Arjihad, he stamped his feet and swore in Dwarvish, swinging his axe into the body of an Urgal. The men only stood in shock. Rubbing a pinch of dirt between his calloused hands, the dwarf growled,
"Ah, oh, now a hornet's nest has broken. We'll have no peace among the Varden after this. Barzun, but this makes things complicated. Were you in time to hear his last words?"
Aragorn glanced at Saphira. "They must wait for the right person before I'll repeat them."
"I see. And where'd be Arya?"
Aragorn pointed. Oric swore again, then shook his head and sat on his heels. Jormunda soon arrived with 12 ranks of 6 warriors each. He motioned for them to wait outside the radius of bodies while he proceeded onward alone. He bent and touched Arjihad on the shoulder. "How can fate be this cruel, my old friend? I would have been here sooner if not for the size of this cursed mountain, and then you might have been saved. Instead, we are wounded at the height of our triumph." Aragorn softly told him about Arya and the disappearance of the twins and Murtagh.
"She should not have gone," said Jormunda, straightening. "But we can do naught about it now. Guards will be posted here, but it will be at least an hour before dwarf guides can be found for another expedition into the tunnels."
"I'd be willing to lead it,"
offered Oric. Jormunda looked back at Trondheim, his gaze distant.
"No, Hrothgar will need you now. Someone else will have to go. I'm sorry, Aragorn, but everyone important must stay here until Arjihad's successor is chosen. Arya will have to fend for herself. We could not overtake her anyway."
Aragorn nodded, accepting the inevitable. Jormunda swept his gaze around before saying so all could hear,
"Arjihad has died a warrior's death. Look, he slew 5 Urgals where a lesser man might have been overwhelmed by one. We will give him every honour and hope his spirit pleases the gods. Bear him and our companions back to Trondheim on your shields, and do not be ashamed to let your tears be seen. For this is a day of sorrow that all will remember. May we soon have the privilege of sheathing our blades in the monsters who have slain our leader."
As one, the warriors knelt, bearing their heads in homage to Arjihad. Then they stood and reverently lifted him on their shields, so he lay between their shoulders. Already many of the Varden wept, tears flowing into beards, yet they did not disgrace their duty and allow Arjihad to fall. With solemn steps, they marched back to Trondheim, Saphira and Aragorn in the middle of the procession. The Council of Elders. Aragorn roused himself and rolled to the edge of the bed, looking about the room, which was suffused with the dim glow of a shuttered lantern. He sat and watched Saphira sleep. Her muscled sides expanded and contracted as the great bellows of her lungs forced air through her scaled nostrils. Aragorn thought of the raging inferno that she could now summon at will and send roaring out of her maw. It was an awesome sight when flames hot enough to melt metal rushed past tongue and her ivory teeth without harming them. Since she first breathed fire during his fight with Durza, while plunging toward them from the top of Trondheim, Saphira had been insufferably proud of her new talent. She was constantly releasing little jets of flame, and she took every opportunity to light objects ablaze. Because Isidar Mithrim was shattered, Aragorn and Saphira had been unable to remain in the Dragonhold above it. The dwarves had given them quarters in an old guardroom on Trondheim's bottom level. It was a large room, but with a low ceiling and dark walls. Anguish gripped Aragorn as he remembered the events of the previous day. Tears filled his eyes, spilling over, and he caught one on his hand. They had heard nothing from Arya until late that evening, when she emerged from the tunnel, weary and footsore. Despite her best efforts and all her magic, the Urgles had escaped her.
"I found these," she said.
Then she revealed one of the twins' purple robes, torn and bloodied, and Murtag's tunic and both his leather gauntlets.
"They were strewn along the edge of a black chasm, the bottom of which no tunnel reaches. The Urgles must have stolen their armour and weapons and thrown the bodies into the pit. I scried both Murtag and the twins and saw naught but the shadows of the abyss."
Her eyes met Aragorn's.
"I am sorry. They are gone."
Now, in the confines of his mind, Aragorn mourned Murtag. It was a dreadful, creeping feeling of loss and horror, made worse by the fact that he had grown ever more familiar with it in past months. As he stared at the tear in his hand, a small, glistening dome, he decided to scry the three men himself. He knew it was a desperate and futile prospect, but he had to try in order to convince himself that Murtag was really gone. Even so, he was uncertain if he wanted to succeed where Arya had failed, if it would make him feel any better to catch a glimpse of Murtag lying broken at the base of a cliff deep below Farthendur. He whispered, "Dramur Cooper." Darkness enveloped the liquid, turning it into a small dot of night on his silver palm. Movement flickered through it, like the swish of a bird across a clouded moon. Then nothing. Another tear joined the first. Aragorn took a deep breath, leaned back, and let calm settle over him. Since recovering from Durza's wound, he had realized, humbling as it was, that he had prevailed only through sheer luck. "If I ever face another Shade, or the Razak, or Galbatorix, I must be stronger if I expect to win. Brom could have taught me more, I know he could have. But without him I have but one choice. The elves." Saphira's breathing quickened, and she opened her eyes, yawning expansively.
"Good morning, little one."
"Is it?" He looked down and leaned on his hands, compressing the mattress.
"It's terrible. Murtag and Arjihad. Why didn't sentries in the tunnels warn us of the Urgles? They shouldn't have been able to trail Arjihad's group without being noticed. Arya was right. It doesn't make sense."
"We may never know the truth,"
said Saphira gently. She stood, wings brushing the ceiling.
"You need to eat. Then we must discover what the Varden are planning. We can't waste time. A new leader could be chosen within hours."
Aragorn agreed, thinking of how they had left everyone yesterday. Oric rushing off to give King Hrothgar the tidings, Jormungandr taking Arjihad's body to a place where it would rest until the funeral, and Arya, who stood alone and watched the goings on. Aragorn rose and strapped on Zarok and his bow, then bent and lifted Snowfire's saddle. A line of pain sheared through his torso, driving him to the floor, where he writhed, scrabbling at his back. It felt like he was being sawed in half. Saphira growled as the rippling sensation reached her. She tried to soothe him with her own mind, but was unable to alleviate his suffering. Her tail instinctually lifted, as if to fight. It took minutes before the fit subsided and the last throb faded away, leaving Aragorn gasping. Sweat drenched his face, making his hair stick and his eyes sting. He reached back and gingerly fingered the top of his scar. It was hot and inflamed and sensitive to touch. Saphira lowered her nose and touched him on the arm.
"Oh, little one."
"It was worse this time," he said, staggering upright.
She let him lean against her as he wiped off the sweat with a rag. Then he tentatively stepped toward the door.
"Are you strong enough to go?"
"We have to. We're obliged as dragon and rider to make a public choice regarding the next head of the Varden, and perhaps even influence the selection.
I won't ignore the strength of our position. We now wield great authority within the Varden. At least the twins aren't here to grab the position for themselves. That's the only good in the situation."
"Very well. But Durza should suffer 1,000 years of torture for what he did to you."
He grunted.
"Just stay close to me."
Together they made their way through Trondheim toward the nearest kitchen. In the corridors and hallways, people stopped and bowed to them, murmuring Arjedlam, or Shadeslayer. Even dwarves made the motions, though not as often. Aragorn was struck by the somber, haunted expressions of the humans and the dark clothing they wore to display their sadness. Many women were dressed entirely in black, lace veils covering their faces. In the kitchen, Aragorn brought a stone platter of food to a low table. Saphira watched him carefully in case he should have another attack. Several people tried to approach him, but she lifted a lip and growled, sending them scurrying away. Aragorn picked at his food and pretended to ignore the disturbances. Finally, trying to divert his thoughts from Murtag, he asked, "Who do you think has the means to take control of the Varden now that Arjihad and the twins are gone?" She hesitated.
"It's possible you could, if Arjihad's last words were interpreted as a blessing to secure the leadership. Almost no one would oppose you. However, that does not seem a wise path to take. I see only trouble in that direction."
"I agree. Besides, Zarya wouldn't approve, and she could be a dangerous enemy. Elves can't lie in the ancient language, but they have no such inhibition in ours. She could deny that Arjihad ever uttered those words if it served her purposes. No, I don't want the position. What about Jormunda?"
"Arjihad called him his right-hand man. Unfortunately, we know little about him or the Varden's other leaders. Such a short time has passed since we came here. We will have to make our judgment on our feelings and impressions without the benefit of history."
Aragorn pushed his fish around a lump of mashed tubers. "Don't forget Hrothgar and the dwarf clans. They won't be quiet in this. Except for Arya, the elves have no say in the succession. A decision will be made before word of this even reaches them. But the dwarves won't be ignored. Hrothgar favours the Varden, but if enough clans oppose him, he might be manoeuvred into backing someone unsuited for the command."
"And who might that be?"
"A person easily manipulated." He closed his eyes and leaned back. "It could be anyone in Farthendur. Anyone at all." For a long while, they both considered the issues facing them. Then Saphira said,
"Aragorn, there is someone here to see you. I can't scare him away."
"Eh?" He cracked his eyes open, squinting as they adjusted to the light. A pale-looking youth stood by the table. The boy eyed Saphira like he was afraid she would try to eat him. "What is it?" asked Aragorn, not unkindly. The boy started, flustered, then bowed.
"You have been summoned, Arjedlam, to speak before the Council of Elders."
"Who are they?" The question confused the boy even more.
The council is... people we, that is, the Varden, choose to speak on our behalf to Arjihad. They were his trusted advisers, and now they wish to see you. It is a great honour."
He finished with a quick smile. "Are you to lead me to them?"
"Yes, I am."
Saphira looked at Aragorn questioningly. He shrugged and left the uneaten food, motioning for the boy to show the way. As they walked, the boy admired Zarok with bright eyes, then looked down shyly. "What are you called?" asked Aragorn.
"Jasha, sir."
"That's a good name. You carried your message well. You should be proud." Jasha beamed and bounced forward. They reached a convex stone door, which Jasha pushed open. The room inside was circular, with a sky-blue dome decorated with constellations. A round marble table inlaid with the crest of Dur Grimstingitum, an upright hammer ringed by 12 stars, stood in the centre of the chamber. Seated there were Jormunda and two other men, one tall and one broad. A woman with pinched lips, close-set eyes, and elaborately painted cheeks, and a second woman with an immense pile of grey hair above a matronly face, belied by a dagger hilt peeking out of the vast hills of her bodice.
"You may go,"
said Jormunda to Jasha, who quickly bowed and left. Conscious that he was being watched, Aragorn surveyed the room, then seated himself in the middle of a swath of empty chairs, so that the council members were forced to turn in their seats in order to look at him. Saphira hunkered directly behind him. He could feel her hot breath on the top of his head. Jormungandr got halfway up to make a slight bow, then reseated himself.
"Thank you for coming, Aragorn, even though you have suffered your own loss. This is Umelth, the tall man. Falbird, the broad one. And Sabre and Elisari, the two women."
Aragorn inclined his head, then asked,
"And what of the twins? Were they part of this council?"
Sabre shook her head sharply and tapped a long fingernail on the table.
"They had naught to do with us. They were slime, worse than slime, leeches that worked only for their own benefit. They had no desire to serve the Varden. Thus they had no place in this council."
Aragorn could smell her perfume all the way on the other side of the table. It was thick and oily, like a rotting flower. He hid a smile at the thought.
"Enough. We're not here to discuss the twins," said Jormungandr. "We face a crisis that must be dealt with quickly and effectively. If we don't choose Ar-Jihad's successor, someone else will. Hrothgar has already contacted us to convey his condolences. While he was more than courteous, he is sure to be forming his own plans even as we speak. We must also consider Duvrangor Gata, the magic users. Most of them are loyal to the Varden, but it's difficult to predict their actions even in the best of times. They might decide to oppose our authority for their own advantage. That is why we need your assistance, Aragorn, to provide the legitimacy required by whoever is to take Ar-Jihad's place."
Falbert heaved himself up, planting his meaty hands on the table.
"The five of us have already decided whom to support. There is no doubt among us that it is the right person. But," he raised a thick finger, "before we reveal who it is, you must give us your word of honour that whether you agree or disagree with us, nothing of our discussion will leave this room."
"Why would they want that?" Aragorn asked Saphira.
"I don't know,"
she said, snorting.
"It might be a trap. It's a gamble you'll have to take. Remember, though, they haven't asked me to pledge anything. I can always tell Arya what they say if needed. Silly of them, forgetting that I'm as intelligent as any human."
Pleased with the thought, Aragorn said, "Very well, you have my word. Now, who do you want to lead the Varden?"
"Naswada."
Surprised, Aragorn dropped his gaze, thinking quickly. He had not considered Naswada for the succession because of her youth. She was just a few years older than Aragorn. No real reason existed, of course, for her not to lead. But why would the Council of Elders want her to? How would they benefit? He remembered Brom's advice and tried to examine the issue from every angle, knowing that he had to decide swiftly.
"Naswada has steel in her,"
observed Saphira.
"She would be like her father."
"Maybe. But what's their reason for picking her?" To gain time, Aragorn asked, "Why not you, Jormungandr? Ar-Jihad called you his right-hand man. Doesn't that mean you would take his place now that he's gone?" A current of unease ran through the council. Sabre sat even straighter, hands clasped before her. Umelth and Falbert glanced at each other darkly, while Elisari just smiled, the dagger hilt jiggling on her chest.
"Because," said Jormungandr, selecting his words with care. "Ar-Jihad was speaking of military matters then, nothing more. Also, I am a member of this council, which only has power because we support one another. It would be foolish and dangerous for one of us to raise himself above the rest."
The council relaxed as he finished, and Elisari patted Jormungandr on the forearm.
"Ha!"
exclaimed Saphira.
"He probably would have taken power if it were possible to force the others to back him. Just look how they eye him. He's like a wolf in their midst."
"A wolf in a pack of jackals, perhaps."
"Does Naswada have enough experience?"
inquired Aragorn. Elisari pressed herself against the table's edge as she leaned forward. I had already been here for 7 years when Arjihad joined the Varden. I've watched Naswada grow up from a darling girl to the woman she is. A trifle light-headed occasionally, but a good figure to lead the Varden. The people will love her. Now I, she patted herself affectionately on the bosom, and my friends will be here to guide her through these troubled times. She will never be without someone to show her the way. Inexperience should be no barrier to her taking her rightful position. Understanding flooded Aragorn.
They want a puppet!
Arjihad's funeral will be held in 2 days, broke in Umelth. Directly afterward, we plan to appoint Naswada as our new leader. We have yet to ask her, but she will surely agree. We want you to be present at the appointing. No one, not even Hrothgar, can complain about it then. And to swear fealty to the Varden. That will give back the confidence Arjihar's death has stolen from the people and prevent anyone from trying to splinter this organization.
Fealty!
Saphira quickly touched Aragorn's mind.
Notice they don't want you to swear to Naswada, just to the Varden.
Yes, and they want to be the ones to appoint Naswada, which would indicate that the council is more powerful than she. They could have asked Arya or us to appoint her, but that would mean acknowledging whoever did it as above everyone in the Varden. This way they assert their superiority over Naswada, gain control over us through fealty, and also get the benefit of having a rider endorse Naswada in public.
What happens, he asked, if I decide not to accept your offer?
Offer? Falbird asked, seeming puzzled. Why, nothing, of course. Only it would be a terrible slight if you're not present when Naswada is chosen. If the hero of the Battle of Farthen Dûr ignores her, what can she think but that a rider has spited her and found the Varden unworthy to serve? Who could bear such a shame?
The message could have been no clearer. Aragorn clenched Zarok's pommel under the table, yearning to scream that it was unnecessary to force him to support the Varden, that he would have done it anyway. Now, however, he instinctively wanted to rebel, to elude the shackles they were trying to place on him.
Since riders are so highly thought of, I could decide that my efforts would be best spent guiding the Varden myself.
The mood in the room hardened.
That would be unwise, stated Sabre.
Aragorn combed his mind for a way to escape the situation.
With Arjihad gone, said Saphira, it may be impossible to remain independent of every group as he wanted us to. We cannot anger the Varden, and if this council is to control it once Naswada is in place, then we must appease them. Remember, they act as much out of self-preservation as we do.
But what will they want us to do once we are in their grasp? Will they respect the Varden's pact with the elves and send us to Ellesmere for training, or command otherwise? Jormunda strikes me as an honourable man, but the rest of the council? I can't tell.
Saphira brushed the top of his head with her jaw.
Agree to be at this ceremony with Naswada. That much I think we must do. As for swearing fealty, see if you can avoid acquiescing. Perhaps something will occur between now and then that will change our position. Arya may have a solution.
Without warning, Aragorn nodded and said, As you wish. I shall attend Naswada's appointment.
Jormunda looked relieved. Good, good. Then we only have one more matter to deal with before you go. Naswada's acceptance. There's no reason to delay with all of us here. I'll send for her immediately. And Arya, too. We need the elves' approval before making this decision public. It shouldn't be difficult to procure. Arya cannot go against our council and you, Aragorn. She will have to agree with our judgment.
Wait, commanded Elisari, a steely glint in her eyes. Your word, though, rider. Will you give it in fealty at the ceremony?
Yes, you must do that, agreed Falbird. The Varden would be disgraced if we couldn't provide you every protection.
A nice way to put it.
It was worth a try, said Saphira. I fear you have no choice now.
They wouldn't dare harm us if I refused.
No, but they could cause us no end of grief. It is not for my own sake that I say accept, but for yours. Many dangers exist that I cannot protect you from, Aragorn. With Galbatorix set against us, you need allies, not enemies, around you. We cannot afford to contend with both the Empire and the Varden.
Finally, I'll give it. All around the table were signs of relaxation, even a poorly concealed sigh from Umerth. They're afraid of us.
As well they should be,
sniped Saphira. Jormunda called for Jasha, and with a few words sent the boys scampering off for Naswada and Arya. While he was gone, the conversation fell into an uncomfortable silence. Aragorn ignored the council, focusing instead on working a way out of his dilemma. None sprang to mind. When the door opened again, everyone turned expectantly. First came Naswada, chin held high and eyes steady. Her embroidered gown was the deepest shade of black, deeper even than her skin, broken only by a slash of royal purple that stretched from shoulder to hip. Behind her was Arya, her stride as lithe and smooth as a cat's, and an openly awestruck Jasha. The boy was dismissed, then Jormunda helped Naswara into a seat. Aragorn hastened to do the same for Arya, but she ignored the proffered chair and stood at a distance from the table.
Saphira, he said, let her know all that has happened. I have a feeling the council won't inform her that they've compelled me to give the Varden my loyalty.
Arya, acknowledged Jormunda with a nod, then concentrated on Naswada. Naswada, daughter of Ajihad, the Council of Elders wishes to formally extend its deepest condolences for the loss you more than anyone else have suffered. In a lower voice he added, you have our personal sympathies as well. We all know what it is like to have a family member killed by the Empire.
Thank you, murmured Naswada, lowering her almond eyes. She sat, shy and demure, and with an air of vulnerability that made Aragorn want to comfort her. Her demeanour was tragically different from that of the energetic young woman who had visited him and Saphira in the Dragonhold before the battle.
Although this is your time of mourning, a quandary exists that you must resolve. This council cannot lead the Varden, and someone must replace your father after the funeral. We ask that you receive the position. As his heir, it is rightfully yours. The Varden expected of you.
Naswada bowed her head with shining eyes. Grief was plain in her voice when she said, I never thought I would be called upon to take my father's place so young. Yet, if you insist it is my duty, I will embrace the office.
Truth Among Friends. The Council of Elders beamed with triumph, pleased that Naswada had done what they wanted. We do insist, said Jormunda, for your own good and the good of the Varden. The rest of the elders added their expressions of support, which Naswada accepted with sad smiles. Sabre threw an angry glance at Aragorn when he did not join in. Throughout the exchange, Aragorn watched Arya for any reaction to either his news or the council's announcement. Neither revelation caused her inscrutable expression to change. However, Saphira told him,
She wishes to talk with us afterward.
Before Aragorn could reply, Falbird turned to Arya.
Will the elves find this agreeable?
She stared at Falbird until the man fidgeted under her piercing gaze, then lifted an eyebrow. I cannot speak for my queen, but I find nothing objectionable to it. Naswada has my blessing.
How could she find it otherwise, knowing what we've told her? Thought Aragorn bitterly. We're all backed into corners.
Arya's remark obviously pleased the council. Naswada thanked her and asked Jormunda,
Is there anything else that must be discussed? For I am weary.
Jormungandr shook his head. We will make all the arrangements. I promise you won't be troubled until the funeral.
Again, thank you. Would you leave me now? I need time to consider how best to honour my father and serve the Varden. You have given me much to ponder.
Nasuada splayed her delicate fingers on the dark cloth on her lap. Umauth looked like he was going to protest at the council being dismissed, but Falbird waved a hand, silencing him.
Of course, whatever will give you peace. If you need help, we are ready and willing to serve.
Gesturing for the rest of them to follow, he swept past Arya to the door.
Aragorn, will you please stay?
Startled, Aragorn lowered himself back into his chair, ignoring alert looks from the councillors. Falbird lingered by the door, suddenly reluctant to depart, then slowly went out. Arya was the last to go. Before she closed the door, she looked at Aragorn, her eyes revealing worry and apprehension that had been concealed before. Nasuada sat partially turned away from Aragorn and Saphira.
So we meet again, Ryder. You haven't greeted me. Have I offended you?
No, Nasuada. I was reluctant to speak for fear of being rude or foolish. Current circumstances are unkind to hasty statements. Paranoia that they might be eavesdropped on gripped him. Reaching through the barrier in his mind, he delved into the magic and intoned, Atra nosu weise vardo fra eldhornia. There, now we may speak without being overheard by man, dwarf or elf. Naswada's posture softened.
Thank you, Aragorn. You don't know what a gift that is.
Her words were stronger and more self-assured than before. Behind Aragorn's chair, Saphira stirred, then carefully made her way around the table to stand before Nasuada. She lowered her great head until one sapphire eye met Naswada's black ones. The dragon stared at her for a full minute before snorting softly and straightening.
Tell her, said Saphira, that I grieve for her and her loss. Also that her strength must become the Varden's when she assumes Ajihad's mantle. They will need a sure guide.
Aragorn repeated the words, adding,
Ajihad was a great man. His name will always be remembered. There is something I must tell you. Before Ajihad died, he charged me, commanded me, to keep the Varden from falling into chaos. Those were his last words. Arya heard them as well. I was going to keep what he said a secret because of the implications, but you have a right to know. I'm not sure what Ajihad meant, nor exactly what he wanted, but I am certain of this. I will always defend the Varden with my powers. I wanted you to understand that, and that I've no desire to usurp the Varden's leadership.
Naswada laughed brittly.
But that leadership isn't to be me, is it?
Her reserve had vanished, leaving behind only composure and determination.
I know why you were here before me, and what the council is trying to do. Do you think that in the years I served my father we never planned for this eventuality? I expected the council to do exactly what it did. And now everything is in place for me to take command of the Varden. You have no intention of letting them rule you, said Aragorn with wonder. No. Continue to keep Ajihad's instruction secret. It would be unwise to bandy it about, as people might take it to mean that he wanted you to succeed him, and that would undermine my authority and destabilize the Varden. He said what he thought he had to in order to protect the Varden. I would have done the same. My father...
She faltered briefly.
My father's work will not go unfinished, even if it takes me to the grave. That is what I want you as a rider to understand. All of Ajihad's plans, all his strategies and goals, they are mine now. I will not fail him by being weak. The Empire will be brought down, Galbatorix will be dethroned, and the rightful government will be raised.
By the time she finished, a tear ran down her cheek. Aragorn stared, appreciating how difficult her position was and recognizing a depth of character he had not perceived before. "And what of me, Naswada? What shall I do in the Vardhan?" She looked directly into his eyes. "You can do whatever you want. The council members are fools if they think to control you. You are a hero to the Vardhan and the dwarves, and even the elves will hail your victory over Durza when they hear of it. If you go against the council or me, we will be forced to yield, for the people will support you wholeheartedly. Right now you are the most powerful person in the Vardhan. However, if you accept my leadership, I will continue the path laid down by Arjihad. You will go with Arya to the elves, be instructed there, then return to the Vardhan." "Why is she so honest with us?" wondered Aragorn. "If she's right, could we have refused the council's demands?" Saphira took a moment to answer.
"Either way, it's too late. You have already agreed to their requests. I think Naswada is honest because your spell lets her be, and also because she hopes to win our loyalty from the elders."
An idea suddenly came to Aragorn, but before sharing it, he asked, "Can we trust her to hold to what she'd said? This is very important."
"Yes," said Saphira. "She spoke with her heart."
Then Aragorn shared his proposal with Saphira. She consented, so he drew Zarok and walked to Naswada. He saw a flash of fear as he approached. Her gaze darted toward the door, and she slipped a hand into a fold in her dress and grasped something. Aragorn stopped before her, then knelt, Zarok flat in his hands. "Naswada, Saphira and I have been here for only a short while. But in that time we came to respect Arjihad, and now, in turn, you. You fought under Fardhan Dûr when others fled, including the two women of the council, and have treated us openly instead of with deception. Therefore, I offer you my blade, and my fealty as a rider." Aragorn uttered the pronouncement with a sense of finality, knowing he would never have mouthed it before the battle. Seeing so many men fall and die around him had altered his perspective. Resisting the Empire was no longer something he did for himself, but for the Vardhan and all the people still trapped under Galbatorix's rule. However long it would take, he had dedicated himself to that task. For the time being, the best thing he could do was serve. Still, he and Saphira were taking a terrible risk in pledging themselves to Naswada. The council could not object, because all Aragorn had said was that he would swear fealty, but not to whom. Even so, he and Saphira had no guarantee that Naswada would make a good leader. "It's better to be sworn to an honest fool than to a lying scholar," decided Aragorn. Surprise flitted across Naswada's face. She grasped Zarok's hilt and lifted it, staring at its crimson blade, then placed the tip on Aragorn's head. "I do accept your fealty with honour, Rider, as you accept all the responsibilities accompanying the station. Rise as my vassal, and take your sword." Aragorn did as he was bidden. He said, "Now I can tell you openly as my master. The council made me agree to swear to the Vardhan once you were appointed. This was the only way Saphira and I could circumvent them." Naswada laughed with genuine delight. "Ah, I see you have already learned how to play our game. Very well. As my newest and only vassal, will you agree to give your fealty to me again, in public, when the council expects your vow?"
"Of course."
"Good. That will take care of the council. Now, until then, leave me. I have much planning to do, and I must prepare for the funeral. Remember, Aragorn, the bond we have just created is equally binding. I am as responsible for your actions as you are required to serve me. Do not dishonour me.
Nor you, I."
Naswada paused, then gazed into his eyes and added in a gentler tone, "You have my condolences, Aragorn. I realise that others beside myself have cause for sorrow. While I have lost my father, you have also lost a friend. I liked Murtagh a great deal, and it saddens me that he is gone. Goodbye, Aragorn."
Aragorn nodded,
a bitter taste in his mouth, and left the room with Saphira. The hallway outside was empty along its grey length. Aragorn put his hands on his hips, tilted back his head, and exhaled. The day had barely begun, yet he was already exhausted by all the emotions that had flooded through him. Saphira nosed him and said,
"This way."
Without further explanation, she headed down the right side of the tunnel. Her polished claws clicked on the hard floor. Aragorn frowned, but followed her.
"Where are we going?"
No answer.
"Saphira, please!"
She just flicked her tail. Resigned to wait, he said instead,
"Things have certainly changed for us. I never know what to expect from one day to the next, except sorrow and bloodshed."
"All is not bad," she reproached. "We have won a great victory. It should be celebrated, not mourned."
"It doesn't help having to deal with this other nonsense."
She snorted angrily. A thin line of fire shot from her nostrils, singeing Aragorn's shoulder. He jumped back with a yelp, biting back a string of curses.
"Oops,"
said Saphira, shaking her head to clear the smoke.
"Oops! You nearly roasted my side!"
"I didn't expect it to happen. I keep forgetting that fire will come out if I'm not careful. Imagine that every time you raised your arm, lightning struck the ground. It would be easy to make a careless motion and destroy something unintentionally."
"You're right. Sorry I growled at you."
Her bony eyelid clicked as she winked at him.
"No matter. The point I was trying to make is that even Naswada can't force you to do anything."
"But I gave my word as a rider."
"Maybe so. But if I must break it to keep you safe or to do the right thing, I will not hesitate. It is a burden I could easily carry. Because I'm joined to you, my honor is inherent in your pledge. But as an individual, I'm not bound by it. If I must, I will kidnap you. Any disobedience then would be no fault of your own."
"It should never come to that. If we have to use such tricks to do what's right, then Naswada and the Varden will have lost all integrity."
Saphira stopped. They stood before the carved archway of Trondheim's library. The vast, silent room seemed empty, though the ranks of back-to-back bookshelves interspersed with columns could conceal many people. Lanterns poured soft light across the scroll-covered walls, illuminating the reading alcoves along their bases. Weaving through the shelves, Saphira led him to one alcove where Arya sat. Aragorn paused as he studied her. She seemed more agitated than he had ever seen her, though it manifested itself only in the tension of her movements. Unlike before, she wore her sword with the graceful crossguard. One hand rested on the hilt. Aragorn sat at the opposite side of the marble table. Saphira positioned herself between them, where neither could escape her gaze.
"What have you done?"
asked Arya with unexpected hostility.
"How so?"
She lifted her chin.
"What have you promised the Varden? What have you done?"
The last part even reached Aragorn mentally. He realized just how close the elf was to losing control. A bit of fear touched him.
"We only did what we had to do.
I'm ignorant of elves' customs, so if our actions upset you, I apologize. There's no cause to be angry."
"Fool! You know nothing about me. I have spent 7 decades representing my queen here, 15 years of which I bore Saphira's egg between the Varden and the elves. In all that time I struggled to ensure the Varden had wise, strong leaders who could resist Galbatorix and respect our wishes. Brom helped me by forging the agreement concerning the new rider, you. Arjihad was committed to your remaining independence so that the balance of power would not be upset. Now I see you siding with the Council of Elders, willingly or not, to control Naswada. You have overturned a lifetime of work. What have you done?"
Dismayed, Aragorn dropped all pretenses. With short, clear words, he explained why he had agreed to the Council's demands and how he and Saphira had attempted to undermine them. When he finished, Arya stated,
"So."
"So."
70 years! Though he knew elves' lives were extraordinarily long, he had never expected that Arya was that old, and older, for she appeared to be a woman in her early 20s.